What if the decisions you make in your first few years as an attending decide whether you get to work 3 days a week in your 40s or 5 days a week into your 60s? Keep listening as we dive in. Welcome to the Money Meets Medicine podcast, where we talk all about the personal finance topics you wish you had learned in medical school. I'm your host, Justin Harvey, and here is your co-host, who hasn't worked a five-day clinical week in medicine in about 5 years, Dr. Jimmy Turner.
Before I get judged by the entire listenership, to be clear, many of those years were because of FTE reductions in academics, working other jobs like being a medical student advisor or the section head for regional anesthesia. It was crazy because back then, I know you're giving me a hard time, but back then, I mean, I didn't have two jobs. I had like seven. And we're going to talk about this on the show because I got insanely burned out. But yeah, I was teaching my personal finance curriculum for the med school. Like when I left Wake, I was 0.25 of my FTE. A quarter of my FTE was being a med student advisor to like 60 medical students. And then I had the section head role for the 14 people in the regional section at Wake that I was responsible for in the department. And then I had Money Meets Medicine. And then, oh, by the way, I still practice anesthesia 3 or 4 days a week, depending on the week. Sometimes, so technically the intro is a little bit wrong. Because I had pain call 6 weeks a year where I was on for 7 days in a row. But by and large, like clinically, I only worked like a few days a week. And this was born out of a very early recognition 2 or 3 years into my career that one of the most important things to me was autonomy over my schedule. And so those jobs that bought down my FTE were days that I owned. I could sleep in and work out and come to the hospital. And as long as I got my work done for those responsibilities, like it was my day, my schedule. I got to determine what that day looked like. And that, I've realized, is a very big ingredient to my happiness. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels that way.
Yeah. One of the biggest things I've observed in coaching people and advising people from trying to build a foundation to moving to that place of freedom is it is time autonomy. And whether they fully understand that or not, or can even articulate it at the beginning, it becomes clear over time, especially as many physicians hope as time passes that they have more flexibility about the clinical demands and how they're going to make that fit into their lives. And it becomes more and more urgent when in some clinical settings, there's actually no flexibility. And there's actually an ongoing continual heaping is like the full time. Plus there's a committee or two, or depending on your specialty, it has its own flavor. That is what really turns the heat up on, oh man, like I still am not in control of my own time. And that tends to be a real motivating factor for people.
Yeah. Most listeners don't know. I wrote a second book called Determined, How Burned Out Doctors Can Thrive in a Broken Medical System. And the entire idea behind the book, and honestly, hilariously, I should probably talk about it more because I think that that book would probably have a larger impact on people in terms of your career. So if you are burned out, go read the book. It's actually a really good book. But the premise behind the book is like these three pillars of burnout and the three pillars of self-determination theory and how they're at odds with each other. And so in my experience, coaching doctors, talking to doctors, getting to know people through Money Meets Medicine, that emotional exhaustion comes from two things, right? And they're both forms of autonomy. It's your personal autonomy over your schedule, right? People get really, really tired of missing the T-ball games and the recitals and the flute concerts for their kids, or missing dinner with their family, or being late again to a date with their spouse. That grades on people. The second thing is professional autonomy. And so that's where things like terrible electronic medical records come in, or having to get pre-authorizations for things that you know are the right thing for a patient because an insurance company wants to tell you how to practice medicine. Those forms of autonomy, in my experience, both personal and professional, are the reason that doctors predominantly get burned out, which is why I wrote that book and some things that you can do to think through that in terms of figuring out like, hey, what is the diagnosis for why I'm burned out so that I can then create a treatment plan and fix it. But for me, I wrote that book from a space of having been burned out. Like I was working 1.3 FTE and we were making huge financial progress for the record. Like we paid off $200,000 in 19 months of student loans. And so like we were hammering away, but then, you know, I had some things happen in my career and I realized that my kids were getting older and I was starting to miss things and they were starting to get old enough where they were asking where I was. And that was really hard to answer. And so it had a profoundly different impact on me. And so we're going to talk about a lot of those topics, wealth accumulation rate, Coast Fire, a whole slew of things on the show. I think this is going to be one of the more valuable shows that we'll have recorded, Justin, to be honest with you. But before we dive in, don't forget, it is June. That means you're graduating residents are listening to this, or you have graduating residents that are yours as an attending physician listening to this, make sure they get quotes for disability insurance before they leave training to make sure they know their options. Even if you're going into fellowship, you know what your options are now versus then, whether you should wait or get it before you leave. If you're looking for a disability insurance company to trust, we would love to take care of it. Money Meets Medicine Disability. You can get a quote from us by going to moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability. So Justin, those first 2 to 3 years, like you hear this all the time, right? And very, very, very famous words in the personal finance space for doctors, right? Is when you finish training, live like a resident. And I've been on air many times saying that I don't love that approach because I think that there's a little more balance you can have where you enjoy your life a little bit more than the exact same life you're living as a resident. If you're able to do that, fantastic. Great. Like, I'm not going to say that that's not going to help you accomplish your financial goals because it certainly will. And that's a great thing if that's you. But if you want to spend a little bit of money after you finish training because you worked hard and you want to enjoy some of that newfound income, I think that's also a wonderful thing. And you can still do that and make your financial goals. I will say the one thing I do agree about is that those first 2 to 3 years out of training, the decisions that you make financially 100% set you up to be on a trajectory to do what we talked about in the intro, where you're going to have the option to work 3 or 4 days a week in your 40s, or you're going to be working 5 to 6 days in your 60s. And it really does come from that trajectory you create in those first 2 to 3 years. And so if you're finishing training, hear me before you finish. And if you've already been out for a year and maybe you've made some decisions that made life hard financially, there's still time, right? But you got to course correct. You got to change the direction of the ship because that trajectory has a long standing impact. And a lot of us in the personal finance community for a long time have basically said, if you tell me what somebody does in their first 3 years, I can probably tell you where they're at by the age of 50. And if I'm being honest, that's pretty true in my experience.
Mine too. And I know a lot of very wealthy physicians and a lot of wealthy business owners. I think this is true of them too. And let's talk about medicine for a minute, because in medicine, it's more common to have a sort of a linear approach to wealth. Sure, you might have a business, whether it's a surgery center or a practice or some kind of medical adjacent thing that gets the private equity buyout and great, good for you. There's a big liquidity event. But typically, the thing for a physician is a high income and a reasonable savings rate over time with a market tailwind that is building wealth. And in order to walk that path, what that requires is that you start the clock as soon as you can. And if you put 10 rich doctors in a room and do a poll, probably 9 of them are going to say, yeah, you know, when I was 32, I didn't really understand the power of compound interest. But by golly, by the time I was 40, I started to see some effects. And by the time I was 52 and I realized I was done and all my friends who finished training and started balling out are still working, like I knew that that was the right decision. I think in medicine in particular, taking advantage of the beauty of what compounding can give you is really important. And it does require that you start the clock. That means today, whenever you're done or as soon as you can, get that savings rate that is high enough so that you can stuff the money into the accounts where it's going to grow for you and give it time and let it grow.
Yeah. And so I think that the best way to figure that out, what that savings rate should be, is to either get a financial advisor. There's a physician financial toolkit that I actually created that has a savings calculator built into it that helps you create your budget, and then you can track your budget and your net worth on it. So if you want to check that out, it's moneymeetsmedicine.com/toolkit to help you figure out that number. But if we're talking about like broad strokes, what I've taught people for 10 years now is I really want your wealth accumulation rate, your WAR is what I call it, to be around 30% when you finish. And the reason for that is because part of that wealth accumulation, like you building net worth and wealth, is going to be from paying off debt, right? So some of that's going to be going towards non-mortgage debt, ideally. So maybe you've got some car loans you need to pay off. Maybe you've got a private loan you need to pay off. Maybe, you know, your student loans, you refinance those and you're working on paying those off. Like part of that percentage is going to be going to that. But if you do the math, again, broad strokes, obviously market returns matter, time matters. There's a lot of variables here. But if you want to retire by the age of 60 or so, you probably need to be saving about 20% per year, gross income. And if you want to be able to retire or have the option to be financially independent before that, let's say at 45 or 50, it's got to be closer to 30. It really does. And that math works out every time I do it. I'm like, this is actually surprisingly accurate in a variety of situations. And so if you're looking for a rule of thumb and you're finishing training and you don't want to go download the toolkit or go talk to Justin to, you know, get an amazing financial advisor to get a very specific number, then I think 30% is the number for me that I think people should be considering when they finish training. So that means if you're making $400,000 a year, 120 grand of it when you finish per year should be going towards paying down non-mortgage debt and investing towards your future. And no, that does not mean go get a Lamborghini at like 8% interest. This is like what we consider non-discretionary debt that you need to pay off. So credit card debt, because you're trying to make ends meet during residency, car loans that you already have, your student loans that you're in a situation you're not going for public service loan forgiveness that you need to pay off. But I don't know. That's my experience, Justin. And I'll be honest, like I've seen it over and over and over at this point. Like it's kind of a truism for me.
That's about where I set the numbers too, Jimmy. And I tell people, if you're in the 30s, you're showing that you have financial independence as a priority and you're willing to meaningfully orient your decision-making around that priority. And then if you're in the 20s, you're above average. And if you're 15 to 20, you're average and you're going to have kind of an average timeline to retirement. And if you're like 10 or less, then you're deep into trade-off territory and praying for Uncle Joey that you didn't know you had to die and leave you the beach house that you didn't know was there. And that will be your salvation.
Before we get back to it, let's talk taxes. As many of you know, I recently took a 1099 private practice gig as an anesthesiologist after being a W-2 doc for 15 years. And honestly, after combining this with the business income from Money Meets Medicine, the tax piece almost broke me. Should I be an S-Corp? What about QBI deductions or the pass-through entity tax breaks I should be taking advantage of? Nobody really teaches this stuff in residency. You just kind of figure it out after you've already screwed it up. That's why I started working with Gelt for proactive tax planning for my own taxes. Gelt is a modern CPA firm that specializes in helping high-earning physicians. So whether you're a locums doc, a practice owner, a partner getting a K-1, or a W-2 physician with 1099 income on the side, Gelt handles the stuff that actually moves the needle. S-Corp elections, PTET credits, QBI, retirement optimization, really everything in between. The biggest reason I started working with Gelt myself is that unlike most CPA firms, they provide a proactive strategy all year long, not just an intake form and running the numbers in February or March each year. So if your CPA only reached out in February or March and left you wondering if you paid more on taxes than you should, it doesn't have to be that way. A great CPA is a year-round partner who knows your business and reaches out proactively. And Q2 is the best time to make a switch because Gelt specializes in exactly this kind of transition for those of you who are ready for a better experience. Speaking of which, when new clients get started this quarter, Gelt goes back through your last 3 years of returns and identifies deductions that were missed, and in some cases is able to recover them. This is included as a complimentary service for new clients. So if your tax situation has outgrown TurboTax or your current CPA only calls you in March each year, head over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA for a free consult with Gelt. And because you're a part of the Money Meets Medicine community, when you use that link, you'll also get a 10% discount off services with Gelt that first year as well. So head on over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA and check out Gelt. And let's talk about it, because we started off talking about how working less saved my career. It's the title of this podcast. And what ended up happening in my career is 2 or 3 years in, I completely burned out. I ended up on antidepressants. It was not a great situation. My family took the brunt of it. I am married to a much better human being than me, who is an absolute saint. That was my complete rock during that time. And it turns out that I was really destroying myself. I was working too hard. I was working way more than I wanted to. And we saved well north of 30% at that point in my life. And so there is a rate at which it's probably too much. You're not balanced in the other direction. But what I will tell you is that if you can save a lot of money those first few years, what that sets you up for is Coast Fire, which I know is one of the topics you and I love talking about. But I saved well over $100,000 on a $315,000 income when I finished. Now, I had extra bonus money that I made from picking up shifts, hence the 1.3 FTE to pay down my student loans. But that said, I was working a lot. I was working pretty much 5 days a week and getting destroyed, and had a couple of professional opportunities pass me up that made me feel completely unappreciated. And I wound up just insanely burned out. Talk about it and Determined, the book I mentioned earlier. What ended up being a part of my salvation was 5 years later, being able to do the math and seeing that we'd made significant financial progress with our investments in a very simple, low-cost, diversified index fund strategy. So these people that tell you you need to get to Fast Fire, like you can actually have significant improvements in your life without trying to get financial independence in 5 or 7 years. But I started doing the math and I backwards engineered it. And so I love savings calculators, by the way. And I determined, like, man, we're saving 120, 130 grand a year right now. We're going to be financially independent at like 42, like 10 years out from training. And then it dawned on me. I was like, or I could save $60,000 less, which was 0.2 of my FTE. And I'd be financially independent at like 44 or 45. Like, it would slow things down a little bit, but I could also have a day off every week. And man, did that do wonders for my personal life and for my mental health. It turned out that I didn't hate medicine. I just was practicing it too much. Like the balance wasn't right for me. And for you, maybe it's going to work every day, 5 days a week. It gives you purpose and connection and identity and you love it. And you wake up every morning eating, sleeping, breathing medicine. Maybe that is you. And if it is, I think that's fantastic. That's great. That was not me. And so for me, I had other interests outside of medicine. And when I started to cut back to, in particular, 3 days a week working clinically, I found out, oh my gosh, I actually like anesthesia again. I like my job again. I like taking care of patients again. I feel like I'm taking better care of patients because I'm showing up as a better version of myself that is more well-rested and actually wants to be here. And that came from a high savings rate in those first 2 to 3 years that allowed me to save less later on and still get to financial independence at an age that is reasonable for us. And we've extended this idea so much that technically, if we're not considering anything related to Money Meets Medicine or my business or anything like that, you know, we would be financially independent the way that we're at right now. We probably save 60 grand a year now. We save half of what we did my first 2 or 3 years on a lot more money. I make a lot more money than I did back then. I save half as much because we know that we'll get to financial independence, a number well over $5 million at the age of 50 if we didn't save anything. And so at this point, like I could just save $0, get to financial independence at 50 and honestly work like probably 2 days a week in medicine without making money for Money Meets Medicine or anything else. That's Coast Fire. And that is a beautiful thing because if you want to work 5 days a week, fantastic. If you don't, you have options. And options, my friend, are, it turns out, autonomy. It's what makes people happy.
When you run at really high RPMs, even if you are banking a lot of money and maybe you're taking the Jimmy out of training path where you're like, 19 months, let's go. Like, just tell me how high to jump and I'm going to knock out those $572,000 of loans. Like, good for you. But there are costs and there are costs to your health. There are costs to your relationships. And it does introduce another MBA speak word, tail risk. What is the likelihood that the tail of the distribution that is really only like, you know, it's a 2 or 3 sigma event, but it shows up because you're running high RPMs and it's a health event. It's a divorce. You don't have the bandwidth to dedicate to keeping your life sane. And so stuff happens. And particularly with marriages, you know, like if you are married and you're doing that, oh, you want to talk about financial setback? Let's talk about a third to you, a third to the spouse, and a third to the lawyers. That's a step back. And so it's great to have a time where you can shovel a lot of money into those growth assets. But also, if you want to go far, you just can't redline the whole time. And you need to have the wisdom. And hopefully, if you are married, you know, you're talking to your spouse or you have a community of people around you that are going to help you maintain a healthy cadence. So that you can go far and go far well.
Yeah, I shared this with you before the show because you and I are good friends and we talk about personal stuff off the air. But I started reading a book lately because I just didn't love the trajectory of my personal life in terms of who I was becoming, which may surprise some of you listening to this. But yeah, it got to the point where I was like, man, like I'm getting really short with my kids. I'm getting angrier than I want to be. And like my kid comes up to me and they're trying to talk to me and I'm too busy because I got something to work on for the business or something else that's going on. And I'm telling her to hold on. And like my kid should be the priority here, not this email I'm trying to answer. And so I started reading a book again called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. He's a pastor that used to be in Portland. He's now in LA, I believe. And it was interesting to me because the thing that's helped me reset on multiple times in the last 10 years is kind of the same thought, which is, am I on a trajectory to become the kind of person that I want to be becoming? And you can ask that question personally. You can ask it professionally. You can ask it financially. Like, am I on the trajectory to get to where I want to be? And if you're not, that's a great question to ask to give you pause and help you reflect on what do you need to change? So like in my personal life, like I need to be in scripture more, right? I hadn't been reading scripture consistently in a while, right? And so now I'm diving through Proverbs. I've been loving it. It's been fantastic. But you know, that came from a place of like, who do I want to be in 5 months or 5 years? Because Proverbs doesn't have to be read today. It's always going to be there, right? And that's what we do to a lot of our financial choices too, where we're like, oh, I'll just take care of that later when I have time. And it turns out that you are your choices. And like those choices, the habits, right, that we form, James Clear, like your habits become who you are. And so that's true financially, it's true professionally, it's true personally, it's true as a husband or wife or a parent. And so when you have those moments like I did when I was 2 or 3 years into my career and I was burning out at a prolific rate, I started to become the kind of person I didn't want to be. And that gave me pause. And I've had that happen a few times in the last 10 years. And so I think that those things can be turned into really good opportunities and really fruitful experiences if you're willing to listen to them. But if you're running it red line, and like bad things happen, right? And we see it in medicine and it's sad. So it's hopefully something that if you're listening to this and you're currently at red line and like you feel like you're running hot and running hard and you're running yourself into the ground, like be gracious to yourself, be kind to yourself, have some self-compassion, give yourself some space, seek counsel, seek wisdom from people in your life that can help you determine if you're becoming the kind of person you want to become personally, professionally, financially. And I say that from someone who's in the midst of doing that process right now myself. So as you are struggling with this decision about how much money to save, consider your life, consider your goals, consider your values, try to figure out where you want to be and how, and also consider where you want to be 10 or 15 or 20 years from now. Coast Fire isn't for everybody. For some people, it's going to be that 15%, 20% saving rates that you just have consistently throughout your career because you love your job and you love medicine and you love waking up and doing it every day. And you don't feel like you need the options that some people want to have as they go along. I will be honest though, as a closing thought and a prelude to next week's episode, so make sure to subscribe. I've never met a doctor who has been upset that they have given themselves options professionally because of their financial choices. I've met many, many doctors who have regretted spending tons of money and not saving enough and later found out they didn't have options they wanted. So just a thought to chew on as we head out and close the show. Before we head out, June, if you're a resident or you're an attending physician who has residents in June, please make sure that they get disability insurance before they finish training. Get quotes from someone you can trust. You can do that with us at Money Meets Medicine. Happy to help take care of you at moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability. You can go to that site, click, get a quote, and we will see all your information and provide you with the options that you have. As always, everybody, appreciate you being here. Thanks for being part of the community. Justin and I, we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Justin Harvey is a certified financial planner at APM Wealth, where he helps anesthesiologists and pain medicine physicians. Dr. Jimmy Turner is a practicing academic anesthesiologist at Wake Forest in North Carolina. He's also a licensed insurance agent. However, either Justin or Jimmy are your financial planner, investment advisor, or insurance agent. This show is expressly for general education and entertainment purposes only. Nothing should be considered financial advice. All views expressed are solely the views of the guests on the show and do not represent the views or opinions of their employer.